I'm Marty Moscoe. Welcome back to Radio Times. Here's a question for you. Who should pick up the tab on the first date? In a recent survey of people in straight relationships, 77% of the respondents said the man should pay. Does that surprise you? It certainly surprised us. Do you agree with that finding? How do you negotiate who pays for what when you're dating? In this hour of Radio Times, we'll be talking about the world of dating, what's changed in recent years, and what has stayed the same. We'll be getting advice on how to navigate online dating and whether text messaging a breakup is good or bad manners. We have a trio of guests, and let me introduce them to you. Elizabeth Tannen is a freelance writer and teacher. Her blog is Dating in the Odyssey Years, an extremely early 30-somethings take on dating, relationships, and other misadventures. Elizabeth Tannen, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Daniel Post Senning, the great-great-grandson of Emily Post, co-author of Emily Post Etiquette, 18th edition, and Emily Post Manners in a Digital World, Living Well Online. Daniel Post Senning, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Oh, it's good to be with you.
And rounding out our trio of guests is Stephen Petro. He writes this civilities column for the Washington Post, as well as Digital Life for USA Today. He's also the author of Stephen Petro's Complete Gay and Lesbian Manners and the forthcoming Mind Your Digital Manners, Navigating Life in an Age Without Rules. Stephen Petro, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Marty, a pleasure.
Daniel, let me begin with you, only because you are the great-great-grandson of Emily Post. What is the correct answer to who should pick up the tab on the first date, or is there a correct answer?
It's definitely one of those tricky moving targets. I like to go with whoever did the hosting is going to do the paying. And if you're going to break from that convention, talk about it ahead of time. I like to warn men today that many women are going to want to split the check or, you know, on any first date, whether it's a man and a woman or anybody. Oftentimes people want to split the check on a first date. And that's oftentimes a good way to go to keep everyone on an equal footing. So even if you've done the inviting, if someone requests that, even if you're doing your hosting role, it's a courteous thing to honor that request and observe that emerging tradition.
What do you think, Elizabeth?
I think that in general, it is usually the guy who is doing the asking. I think that people sort of say that, but whoever asks should pay. Most often in my experience, it is the man. And I think that frankly, he should offer. I think it's appreciated. I don't have that expectation. I don't know. I wouldn't dismiss someone for not offering, but I do think that it is a win-win for the guy to at least make the gesture.
One of our listeners on Facebook posted, Elizabeth, the person who invites should be the person who picks up the tab, at least in the beginning. Sounds like you agree with them.
Yeah, I think that it's hard to disagree with that.
Now, to you, Stephen, it gets more complicated, but perhaps, or maybe not, when talking about gay and lesbian relationships. How is that navigated?
Well, it does get a lot more tricky, and that's in part why I wrote the book. And this question and the who opens the door question,
right.
Which I'm sure we'll get to.
Of course.
I get more queries from same-sex couples about this because the traditional rules, you know, you really can't apply them. Well, if you say it's the guy and you have two guys, that's not really helpful. And if you have two women, it's not too helpful. So the default in the gay community has been the one who asks generally pays, although oftentimes they will agree to split it until they decide how much they actually like each other. And I think, you know, getting away from the gender-based manners that we know is good for everybody. But as Daniel said, it's always important to talk beforehand.
Well, and Daniel, back to you. As Stephen just said, can we take gender out of the equation when talking about some of these dating rules or the perhaps the lack of rules these days?
As strange as it is to say, absolutely, you really can. It's what we've been striving for in our business etiquette for years now. We really look to honor the person, not the particular sex or gender. And figuring out a code of conduct that works for everybody, it's really important to keep the eye on that it's important to recognize someone's humanity and show them consideration, respect, be honest and forthright with them. That's the most important thing. That's the heart of good etiquette. And as long as we hold to that, we're not going to lose the grand tradition of courtesy or social norms. New ones are going to emerge. And as Stephen just said, you know, it applies to all kinds of areas of social life, whether it's opening the door. That was a great column in the Washington Post recently, Stephen. I'm a big fan.
Likewise. You know that.
But absolutely, we can take those courtesies that have been evolving in the business world and bring them into the social sphere with some ease, some grace, and hopefully some charm.
Well, let me turn to you, Elizabeth, and I read some of what you've been blogging about, and it sounds like, at least for you and perhaps the people that you know, dating is fraught. And do you think it is possible to remove the gender issue?
I don't. I think that, you know, I mean, it feels really complicated and troubling to say that. You know, I consider myself a very progressive woman, and I don't want to sound anti-feminist. But I don't think it's possible to remove the gender factor when it comes to dating specifically. I mean, I think we get caught up between, you know, pushing for equality in terms of gender as far as, you know, women should be paid the same and respected equally and not boxed into any particular set of expectations. But when it comes to dating, I don't know that it's possible for us to inhabit the same roles. Men and women are fundamentally different at when it comes to dating, because dating is about sex, and we're fundamentally different when it comes to sex. Women are still in a more vulnerable space in our culture when it comes to issues of dating and sex. We still get catcalled. We still are held to an extremely unrealistic standard of beauty. You know, I mean, the word slut, there's still not a male equivalent for the word slut. Even boy crazy. Somebody called me boy crazy the other day. I was like, hey, that's, you know, what would you call a guy?
That's, yeah.
It's just,
girl
it's
crazy.
There is a double standard,
yeah,
which is also a kind of a complicated phrase. But I think I don't think that will ever change. I mean, I think fundamentally, we can have babies and men can't, and that will always make us more vulnerable, and we're still more vulnerable in other ways too. And so long as that is the case, I don't think it's realistic to say that we should be expected to inhabit the same roles when it comes to
all the things that you said there about this double standard, and I don't disagree with you, but taking that example, why should the guy pay for the dinner on the first date? That was my question.
I don't want to say that he should. I'm saying that he's not doing anything wrong and is probably earning himself a little bit more by just making the offer if he pays. And we're just talking about a drink. I mean, most people I know are just getting a drink on a first date. And so if a guy approaches me and asks me if I want to have a drink, and then he offers to pay for it, I'm going to think a little bit more of him. If he doesn't, and I like him, then that's great, too. I'm not going to hold it against him. But I think that what it signals is that he's serious about pursuing me, and I think it signals just a level of, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is that I think because women are more vulnerable, it is still fair to expect the man to be a little bit more in the role of pursuer. So it's basically like saying we expect men to ask women out more, and we do. I'm not saying that's ideal, but I think that that's realistic.
That's a realistic
role that men and women occupy.
Yeah, Stephen, I know you want to add something. Go ahead.
Well, I think there's a larger sort of cultural overlay going on, too, and that is there's a move in other studies that I've seen, as well as anecdotally that I see from my questions, towards more traditional gender roles in this decade than we've seen in more recent decades. And, you know, you cited that statistic of, you know, most men being sort of asked to pick up the tab.
Right.
I saw a study the other day. 65% of young women now plan to take the name of their husband. That's a big shift from 10 or 20 years ago. So I think there's something else in play that all this kind of gets caught up in, and that's what makes it so confusing, especially for people who are dating, because you don't have really the traditional assumptions to fall back on, and it's a moving target, and, you know, people go crazy.
Well, Daniel, someone else posted on our Facebook yesterday, Ken said men should always pay. After all, that's what keeps women coming back to internet dating sites. Free dinners for life.
Well, we've definitely all heard that.
Yes, exactly.
Or some version of it, the dating for dinner phenomenon. I think it happens way, way, way less than the attention that it gets. And that is the cautionary tale, that you don't want to appear like you're expecting it or assuming it of someone, because that can create an impression about you on a first date as well. But I do want to recognize something Elizabeth said that I think is really smart. And she talked about ways to signal your intention or your seriousness. And one of the tricky things about today's very casual and informal world is figuring out exactly how serious to take something, whether it's important to be casual and light about a first encounter or whether to give it the significance that a first date used to have. And I hear from younger audiences, and I'll also echo what Stephen was saying, who more and more I'm hearing really craving some guidelines to navigate this world of choice that we live in. And I definitely see that same trend of people looking to past traditions to serve as a guidepost in this shifting environment.
Stephen, go ahead, Daniel. Sounds like you want to ask
something
else.
One of the ways you can bring some seriousness or sort of up the level a little bit to bring a casual encounter into that territory of date, which is even sometimes hard for people to figure out if they're on one or not, is to occupy those traditional roles a little more clearly, to do a clear ask, to be sure you ask someone not if they want to do something, but invite them to do a specific thing, so that you do assume that role of host. You've taken a chance, and at the end, you're probably going to pay for it.
Sounds like a lively conversation on our Facebook page. Jane says, at her advanced age of 58, those are her words, she's moved on with the times, splits expenses with her date. She enjoys the freedom that comes with that. Stephen, does that make sense to you?
You know, that makes perfect sense, especially since that is working for her, and presumably that is working for the people that she's dating. You know, I think all of us agree that we don't want to straitjacket anybody into doing something a particular way. It is, after all, what two people you know, enjoy and come to. So, but also I think that woman is of, she's of my generation, and she grew up at a time, I imagine, when she might have been a feminist and so on. So those political values, you know, become infused with manners, and that's the way it is.
Well, Elizabeth, let me go back to you and even your blog, Dating in the Odyssey Years, which I was reading yesterday. I mean, it sounds like, and I don't know if you speak for your generation in your 30s or late 20s.
Extremely early
30s. Yes, I got that. But the dating is difficult. It's perhaps not a lot of fun. That was one of my takeaways.
Yeah, I mean, the word I usually use to describe it, I can't say on the radio, but I think another one is Wild West. I mean, there's just really very little shared understanding in my generation of what the rules are, but what the modes of operating should be. You know, I mean, when I talked to your producer last week, I made a generalization that younger men tend to not make the assumption that they should pay. And, you know, that I was going to forgive millennials because they just weren't brought up that way. And then the next day I went out with a 25-year-old who instinctively paid. You know, it's completely wide open and just hard for anyone to know what to expect and how they should behave, which makes things complicated.
Indeed, it does. Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. I do want to pick up on all the points that you have been making. That's Elizabeth Tannen. She's a freelance writer, a teacher. Her blog is Dating in the Odyssey Years. Also with us, Daniel Post-Senning. He's the great-great-grandson of Emily Post, co-author of the 18th edition of Emily Post Etiquette and Emily Post Manners in a Digital World, Living Well Online. Stephen Petro, our third guest, and he writes the Civilities column for the Washington Post, as well as Digital Life for USA Today, author of Stephen Petro's Complete Gay and Lesbian Manners, and the forthcoming Mind Your Digital Manners, Navigating Life in an Age Without Rules. And it seems that's one of the issues for dating today. We want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times and keep that conversation going on Facebook. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. In this hour of the show, dating, how to date in the 21st century. Apparently, it's rather complicated. Talking with Stephen Petro, Daniel Post-Senning, and Elizabeth Tannen. Let me get to, looks like Jason from Westchester to join our conversation. Jason, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, I just want to make a comment about splitting the bill. From my experience, if, you know, I'm into the person that I'm dating, I will pick up the bill 100%. But if I know from the start of the date that it's not going well and I have no interest pursuing that relationship, and they offer to split the bill, I take them up on that.
Does that seem fair, Daniel Post-Senning?
I think that's not uncommon, and it gets back to the question of whether or not you're signaling the seriousness with which you take something. And definitely wanting to put your best foot forward. You never meet someone on the first date. You meet their representative. And part of that process of putting your best foot forward might be making that extra effort to pay, although I would try to have a standard that I was going to stick to regardless of the way the first date sort of pl- plays out. but you know, different people are going to do things right. differently, and we operate in a real world of practicality.
Stephen, do you want to add to that?
I do. You know, I like that when people ask someone out, that they actually ask someone out, would you like to have a cup of coffee with me? Would you like to go have a drink? And within that is implied that you will pay for that. So I kind of don't really like your shifting ground, Jason, where, you know, if it's not going so well, well, we'll just change the rules of engagement here. Also, you know, I've certainly found from my experience when I was dating, it's often hard to know in those first 15 minutes, and it can take longer than that, and you don't want to preclude that second opportunity.
What do you think, Elizabeth?
Well, I think it kind of the inverse of that. I mean, if I go out with someone, you know, I dated someone recently who asked me out, you know, approached me in a coffee shop, asked me on a straightforward date, and then didn't offer to pay. But he was incredibly attractive and charming, and I continued to hang out with him and had a great time.
But so you forgave him?
You know, but then when I've gone out with someone who I've not felt that way about, I've been very annoyed when he hasn't paid. So, you know, there you have it.
Well, you sound like a tough date, I have to say, Elizabeth.
I am.
You are?
And what do you mean by hang out, Elizabeth?
Yeah, what do you mean by hang out, Elizabeth?
I know. Oh, God, that's terrible. I continue to date him.
I got you.
Okay.
Well, you know, I do want to get to the opening doors things. I had no idea how fraught that was. But here's another email comment. I think the person who can best afford it should pay, which adds a whole other little wrinkle. Elizabeth, can I go back to you on that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when I was living in New York in my 20s, I was dating a lawyer for a few months, and he insisted on paying for everything, and I appreciated that. I mean, there was one time when I insisted on paying, and I literally had to, like, physically hold him, like, against the table to give the waiter my credit card because I didn't want somebody to pay all the time. But at the same time, he was making significantly more money than me, and so the fact that he offered to pay more consistently, I really appreciated. If I'm dating somebody who's also, you know, an artist or you know, works at a restaurant and isn't making as much money, then yeah, I think it does make sense to split things. So, I mean, there's definitely a practical element.
What do you think, Daniel?
I definitely agree that the heart of good etiquette is practicality. But at the same time, I don't think you ever want to assume that someone's going to pay all the time, whatever the circumstance or situation. A good date doesn't need to be an expensive date. There are lots of things you can do, and it can take that that generosity and turn it into an obligation if it's really just assumed it's going to happen every time. If you do find yourself in that situation, the advice that I would give is make an effort to do something sometimes where you're initiating that aren't going to break your bank account. So it's definitely going to work a lot of times. I understand what Elizabeth's saying there. At the same time, I wouldn't take advantage of that or just assume that that's the way it's going to work. I really like the tradition of the person who asks plays the role of the host. It really starts to clarify the situation for everyone. People know the role that they're going to play.
Stephen, let me go back to you and this article that got so much play, which is holding the door open for other people, I guess, and the role of gender. Are you surprised at that? You know, very momentary interaction is so fraught?
I'm actually not, because really? I see it so often in my day-to-day world. And I was actually in an elevator this morning, and I waited for the woman to exit, which was sort of metaphorically like opening the door. And she kind of, it was a business situation, a business elevator. She gave me those dagger eyes, like, you know, don't do that. So, you know, on a personal level in those relationships and, you know, in a business relationship, it's confusing again, too. You know, I say the best rule is whoever comes to the door first, regardless of gender, should kindly hold that door for the person following, and that person should then go through and nod or somehow acknowledge that. But it gets complicated, and I know, you know, for instance, my niece, who's a freshman, she expects guys to open the door for her. So, and I imagine she's expecting the guys to pay for those first dates, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like I hear from all three of you is that there perhaps is a need for more rules. I don't know. I'm probably older than all of you. I graduated high school in 67. This was like the, you know, the counterculture, and I don't remember any rules about dating at all. But I hear all three of you saying is we need some guidelines. Daniel, do you want to comment on that?
I really would, because it's a double-edged sword. I'll tell a story about my great-great-grandmother, Emily Post, who married poorly, made a bad choice as a young woman, and was divorced, wrote to support herself later in life, and took some pleasure by the third edition of etiquette. She removed the chapter on chaperones for dates, because she wanted to give young people a little more latitude and respect the youth culture that was starting to emerge around her and the way people were doing things. And too many rules can really lock us into roles that we're not going to be comfortable playing or don't suit us. So I think it's really a good idea to have guidelines, to have some structure, but then to allow for some latitude within that structure. And I think that's the territory that we're all looking for today. It's important to remember why we abandoned that tradition of the man always paying to begin with, because while for some people it was a very generous gesture and was appreciated as such, for other people it started to feel like an obligation, both for the man to pay and for the woman that she's now in the debt of this person who she's just meeting in some way. So we want those rules, we want those guidelines, but we want to be careful to construct them in a way that really allow us to be the people that we are.
Well, I know, Daniel, you're recently engaged, so you're kind of out of the dating scene, but Elizabeth, you're living it. Would more rules, more guidelines, would that make your life easier?
It's a tough question. I mean, sure, I think it would be helpful if there were more commonly held expectations, but what those should be, I really couldn't tell you. I mean, just to go back to what I said at the beginning, I think that so long as women do occupy this space that is, you know, notably more vulnerable, I think it's okay. I think it should be okay for men to offer some small gestures of chivalry, like holding the door, like offering to pay for a drink on the first date. I don't think that those things should be frowned upon, and in my experience, they're not. You know, I mean, I think that the idea of a woman being horribly offended, people talk about that, but I can't think of a single woman I know, and I know a lot of very progressive women, and I don't know anyone that would be offended by a guy offering to pay on the first date or holding that door for her. So I think that if we can just come to a place of just acknowledging that it's okay for those gestures to happen, I would appreciate that. But beyond that, I don't know.
I'll tell you, Marty, if I
could Daniel, go ahead.
The word that I want to key there is offer instead of insist.
Yeah.
So you're offering to perform a traditional courtesy. You're not abandoning those niceties or those considerations for each other. You're just not assuming them of the other person. There's a term that's popular in training circles now where people talk about the platinum rule or the evolution of the golden rule. The golden rule being do unto others as you would have them do unto you. The platinum rule is you think about the standards of other people. You treat other people the way they would like to be treated. And I do think it's important not to assume that your traditional courtesies are going to be someone else's, but that you ask permission. As long as it's an offer and not an insistence, I think you're in really safe territory.
And that's Daniel Post-Senning, who joins us along with Elizabeth Tannen and Stephen Petro. We are talking about dating in the 21st century. We want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. In fact, we're getting lots of phone calls and email comments as well. Stephen, I have a quick question for you. Your previous book, Stephen Petro's Complete Gay and Lesbian Manners, are there gay and lesbian manners that are different from manners for the rest of the population?
Well, you know, that's a question I get asked a lot. And, you know, when we're hosting guests, you know, we treat them the same way. And but really, you know, the serious answer is that there have been a lot of situations where the traditional manners books have not spoken to the kinds of situations that happen to LGBT people. And that book covers a lot about how to come out, planning same-sex marriages, civil unions, dealing with bullying, and so on. And so we've kind of been invisible. And Daniel, while I have you on the line here, you know, I recently in a column made reference to the fact that on one of the Emily Post sites, there are like dozens of ways to do how to address couples, and some of them very interesting and very arcane, but none addressed same-sex couples. So that's kind of where, you know, we sort of are invisible oftentimes in the manners world. And so this has been an attempt to make for more visibility and also to sometimes clarify so-called rules when gender especially doesn't work.
Does that make sense to you, Daniel?
Absolutely. I'll acknowledge Stephen's valid critique. I say I've got a pen and paper next to me. I make notes throughout the call. I definitely made a little.
I'll help you with it. Daniel, I'll help you and Peggy with it. I love you guys.
Hey, take this off the air, guys, okay?
Okay.
It really does. And Stephen's book is on my bookshelf. I'm looking at his smiling face right now from the binding. And I have it for just that reason. They're all sorts of new manners that are emerging as the world that we live in gets increasingly diverse and complex, and no one reference source is going to work for every situation. So I really love having the chorus of voices out there carrying forward the core message that it's important how we treat each other, and that if we think about it and we make that effort, that we're all going to be in a better place.
Elizabeth, I have an email comment from Scott for you. He says, as a longtime couple gay man of 62, I'm so taken aback by the assumptions of younger straight folks that men should pay, and the premise of one of your female guests, that would be you, is that it's the man's role to pursue. He asks, what happened to the feminism and the equality movement of the 1970s? Can you speak to that?
Well, that's exactly why I didn't say that. I mean, I don't think that it should always be an expectation. I'm just saying that I appreciate the gesture. When a man asks me out on a first date, if he offers to pay, I appreciate it. I'm not saying, like I said, I continue to date someone who explicitly asked me out on a clear date and didn't pay. So it's not like I'm scoffing and turning away from a man who doesn't do that, because I understand that it's not a universal expectation. I just think that I just don't think that men and women are the same. They can't occupy the same space in heterosexual relationships, because that's just, we're different, you know? I mean, science increasingly shows that men and women's brains work differently, you know? I mean, women have babies and men don't. I don't know that we can ever get past that basic fact that women are just always going to be more vulnerable when it comes to sex, when it comes to the roles that we carve out for ourselves in dating. Ideally, we would. You know, I mean, I would like to think that there should be no expectation whatsoever, that it should be just as accepted for women to pursue men as it is for men to pursue women. And it is. I mean, women ask men out all the time, but not as much. And that's just the reality. So it's like, we can talk about the ideal world, or we can talk about the world that we're living in. And so I'm just describing what I see around me.
We are talking about the world of dating in this hour of Radio Times. That's Elizabeth Tannen. Also with us, Daniel Post-Senning and Stephen Petro, taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. Let me get, looks like Carlos from Philadelphia to join our conversation. Hi, Carlos. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Marty.
Hi,
thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a big fan of your show.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask the panel, one of the things that me and my friends begin to a lot of discussions about, I mean, I agree that the man should pay if he offers to take the lady out on a date. But if it's a neutral agreement to just meet up and hang out and have some dinner, if the guy goes to pay, and this is one of the things that we always talk about, is we appreciate it at least if the lady would just make a gesture, like reach for her purse, and then you can decline to have her pay. I wanted to know what the panel thinks about that.
Well, I'm interested that you use the word lady, Carlos.
He's a gentleman,
yeah, Marty. I appreciate that. I wasn't calling you out there, Carlos. I like the fact that you use the word lady. I'm not sure. Stephen, let me toss that first to you.
You know, I think he makes a good point that as someone, it's nice when someone makes the offer, if it's the guy, and it's very nice when reciprocity is offered. You know, it makes for more balance. It also is a signal that there's generally mutual interest. So I think there's a lot that goes on with that kind of interchange, and I love it when it's opposite sex couples or same sex couples.
Carlos, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. It looks like we're really stuck on this issue about who pays on that first date. I did want to move on, but let me see first what Maureen from Glenmore has to say. Maureen, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
So I think I'm going to add a little bit more of a layer of complexity to this situation.
Good.
Because as a 45-year-old dating woman, I always offer to pay, and now I've just tried to always cut back to a cup of coffee, because twice in the past, you know, recent couple months, I've had a man say to me point blank, like, well, why did you let me pay for dinner? It becomes a power position, and they presume that because they pay for dinner that we'll go out again.
Ah.
And then want to say, hey, you know what? I don't think this is going to be a great match. You know, it was lovely to meet you. Well, then why did you let me pay? I wouldn't have paid. You know, kind of a presumption of if I pay for dinner, then you're obligated to go out with me again. So now I'd like to, whoever said 15 minutes to determine, I usually know in about 15 seconds.
That was me.
You know what, Maureen, let me give Elizabeth the first crack at that, because can you relate to this, Elizabeth?
You know, that's never been my experience, that there's an expectation attached to it. That has not been my experience, so I don't really know what to
say.
I don't think
that
should be the case, that you're under any obligation. I mean, especially, I think a first date should always be a drink, whether that's a beer or a glass of wine or coffee. It's just less commitment. Like you said, often we do know within the first 15 seconds, and you don't want to, you know, waste the time and potentially the money if it's somebody that you're not interested in. But I wouldn't not let a guy pay because I didn't want to see him again. But usually it would just be, you know, $10 to $20.
In circumstances, so. I offered to pay. So that was what made it even more astounding.
Right. Sure, sure.
Yeah, I think that's totally unreasonable.
Those guys are just creeps.
Go ahead, Stephen. What
those guys
say?
Are just creeps. They're creeps, and you're better off without them.
I have to up my game is what you're telling me.
I do, you know, and it takes a lot of trial and error. So keep going.
Yeah, Maureen, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me throw something else in, again, also off our Facebook page. To you, Daniel, we're almost up in a break here. Linda wrote, I think men on the first date especially like to show off a bit and feel like they're in charge, thus they pay. Do you think there's some truth to that?
I think there can be sometimes, and we're starting to see why it's fraught and why you want the option on the table to split the bill. That last call where the sense of obligation comes with it, or this call where it's creating a negative impression in someone's mind. And if we want to reestablish the option of having that equality. And it's why it's nice to talk about it ahead of time, so that dance isn't happening around the check. You're going to avoid that signaling about how good was this date? What are my intentions right now? Used to be the kiss goodnight. Am I going to go for that kiss goodnight? Was that test moment of how good the date had gone. And I'd like to keep it in that romantic space and away from the check and the credit card.
And
so have to talk about money ahead of time and start with the assumption that the person who asks pays.
Let's take another break and get back to our conversation. That's Daniel Post-Senning, Stephen Petro, and Elizabeth Tannen. Stay with us. Much more after this short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking with Stephen Petro. He writes the Civilities column for The Washington Post, as well as Digital Life for USA Today. He's the author of Stephen Petro's Complete Gay and Lesbian Manners and a forthcoming book called Mind Your Digital Manners, Navigating Life in an Age Without Rules. Daniel Post-Senning, also with us, great-great-grandson of Emily Post, co-author of Emily Post's Etiquette 18th Edition, if you can believe it, and Emily Post Manners in a Digital World, Living Well Online, and Elizabeth Tannen. She's a freelance writer, teacher. Her blog is Dating in the Odyssey Years, and she goes on to describe it, an extremely early 30-something take on dating, relationships, and other misadventures. That's what we're talking about. And taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. I do want to talk about digital dating, which has just, as I understand it, just exploded. Does that surprise you, Stephen, that so many people are using the internet to date or find people or, you know, flirt?
Not at this point, since I have, it's probably been about 10 years that I've been married, and I was certainly using digital means to date, you know, from the 90s on. I think just about everything that we do these days has the internet or an app or a social media platform as part of it. And, you know, there are pros and cons. It can make dating more efficient. You can filter people out. And I think, on the other hand, it can add a layer of, not inhumanity, but it can become very depersonalized. Mm-hmm. And I see way too often that, you know, people are just not treating each other nicely or well when they have this screen between them and the other person.
Do you see it that way, Elizabeth? I'm curious about how you use the internet to date.
Yeah, I have used the internet to date. I'm not using it right now, but I probably will again. I mean, when I don't do it, I don't do it because I find it difficult. I think that, like that caller said, you usually know within seconds of meeting someone whether you have chemistry, and you just can't figure that out on the internet. So it just makes it feel like a lot of work to kind of weed through. You know, it's like you don't want to waste time interacting with somebody online if you're only going to meet them and realize there's not a spark right away. At the same time, there is some benefit to figuring out, you know, whether you have things in common, and you can be a little bit more, you know, intentional about who you're pursuing when you meet online. But I haven't had the experience of being treated poorly. I mean, I think there's Tinder, which is just kind of its own terrible category, and I think we should just obliterate that. And then there's Tinder. Other forms of online dating that are a lot more humane. So I think that's almost two separate conversations.
That's a hookup app, right? Right, Elizabeth?
Yeah, I mean, it's people call it the straight grinder, and basically you just swipe through people's faces and then have the opportunity to chat with them if it's a match, if you both like how each other look, and it's purely based on that. There's literally, there's like one line that you can put, like one caption, but there's no information. And then so once you both like how each other look, you can chat and then go on dates. I had it on my phone for about a week, and then I got totally creeped out and deleted it.
Daniel, what creeps you out online for digital dating?
Any time that mediated interaction allows someone to behave in a way or encourages or even sort of seduces someone into behaving in a way that they wouldn't if they were face-to-face with someone, I think that can be troublesome. Or the idea of dating as commerce, that you dehumanize the experience. At the same time, so much of our lives have moved online. I think it's a normal and natural process that aspects of our love life would move online. And as far as the different services go, a little bit like the type of medium you choose to communicate in being part of the message today, I think you can pretty much find whatever you want from a hookup app to a site that really specializes in looking for long-term matchmaking, people who want to get married. And so to that idea, I think it's a great thing. I just know so many people that have met their longtime partners online, and it's hard to ignore the very real human connections that do get made there. Also, and you just separating the wheat from the chaff is the trick.
Go ahead, and then Elizabeth, we'll get you back in. Go ahead, Stephen.
So I was just going to tell a personal story here. So when I was single, I did use some of these services, and found that I was able to meet a lot of people, but not guys who wanted to be in relationships. And I turned to something that's very retro, to a human matchmaker. And this is Dale, and I wrote about this in the Modern Love column for the New York Times, a real-life guy who spent hours with me and hours with the other people in the program and kind of had this intuitive Dolly Levi sense. And one of his theories was that we don't always know what we're looking for, and the algorithms for online dating, you know, they kind of do the chemistry match and other things. And so it worked for me. It's worked for several of my friends. And it's kind of interesting to kind of see that play out. And it's more and more prevalent at the same time that there's so much digital dating going on.
I mean, a rather old-fashioned way of getting mm-hmm. people together. But was this matchmaker, did they ask very sort of deep psychological questions to know sort of who you are, Stephen, what you were looking for?
You know, he spent a lot of time with me, but in my house, he looked at my books, he looked at my records, my dog. You know, I'll tell you, I'm not going to tell my example, but I have a very good friend who, he's a writer also, and he wanted a partner who's very sort of cerebral in that way. And the matchmaker matched him with a Vietnamese chef who at the time they met probably spoke half English, and they've been together 17 years. And it was this sort of counterintuitiveness that the matchmaker saw that they hadn't been able to see.
Elizabeth, you wanted to add something. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to add, I mean, I completely agree that you can meet the love of your life online. Many people have done it. It's totally possible. It's hard. Like, dating is hard. But I think that what is problematic, I said that it's not that I hadn't been treated well, but I've definitely gotten the sense that even not Tinder, even just OkCupid or Match or the other popular sites, I think they do kind of perpetuate this idea that there's infinite possibilities out there. There was a really smart op-ed in the Times a couple of weeks ago by a woman named Leah Reich. I don't know if it's Reich or Reich, but just about it was specifically about Tinder, but just how toxic it is to create this culture in which everyone is constantly looking over their shoulder and constantly thinking that there's something better out there, because that's sort of the way that we're trained as humans to think. But when you're not dating online, it's easier to feel like there's a finite set of possibilities. And when you're dating online, it's easy to feel like there are infinite possibilities. And I think that can be really problematic as well.
I mean, does that feel like, Elizabeth, the sort of loss of serendipity, if you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not as romantic, but that's fine. I just think it's dangerous. I mean, especially, you know, when you're living in a city like New York,
right.
Like, not only is the guy looking over your shoulder to see who's behind you, he's thinking about all of the hundreds of thousands of women that are on his phone.
Exactly, right, exactly. Let me get some more callers in. Looks like we have Scott from Washington's Crossing. Scott, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
Oh, yeah, it's the first time I've ever called in, and this really kind of struck a bell for me, but I'm 59 years old, and I think it's a combination of how you were raised and things like that. But, you know, in regard to, like, holding the door for somebody, it's just a common courtesy. It doesn't matter whether it's your wife or fiance, or even if it's a guy, you just do it. And I got divorced, like, 3 years ago and met somebody online. And we're engaged, and I think it's also a financial kind of thing, but I wouldn't even think twice about not paying for her. But I can see with, you know, the younger generation where it might be a little different, but I think it comes down to common courtesy, and it's something that you either get figured out yourself or you're born with, and or your parents teach you that, but
I hear you, Scott.
Kind of struck a nerve.
No, fair enough. I'm glad you called in, Daniel. I mean, in certain ways, and I guess this is sort of what Emily Post said many years ago about common courtesy. Yes,
absolutely. If only it were so common. and although I'm definitely hearing something from this caller that's really reminding me of the tone that I was hearing from Elizabeth earlier in our call, where. In a situation where people are playing what we've called more traditional gender roles, the man playing the role of the pursuer, that it is nice to make some allowance for that. In this world of incredible diversity, it's really important that we have a code of conduct and a code of etiquette that works for the heteronormative experience as well. And the assumption that it's going to be the person who invites, in most cases the man who pays, is really ingrained in a lot of people. And I don't think that's something that's going to get lost. But I also do think it's important to continue to honor it as we move through this clearly complex territory.
Indeed. And we have a question from the control room. Do the guests believe in, on the first date, expressing expectations clearly how serious they want to be? And Elizabeth, I'll get to you, but let me give Stephen to do a crack at that.
You know, I saw a survey recently, and I wrote about this in my USA Today column, that the advice used to be on a first date that you should wait until maybe 2 or 3 days after that date before asking the person out again. This survey, which was done by J-Date and Christian Mingle, said that the expectation now is if you don't hear within 24 hours that you should assume that there's no interest. So the whole speed of dating seems to be sort of in this time warp, which puts a lot of pressure on people, and is a real change from what the expectations used to be. And I actually have a question coming up where I think it was two guys were on a first date, and one of them asked in the middle of the date for the second date, and I said, "Look, you know, too soon."
Is that why you went, "Ugh, Elizabeth"?
Well, I mean, I think if. I appreciate it if somebody on the first date, if they, like recently I was on a first date, it went really well, but at the end of it, the guy said, you know what, I just want to be clear, I've had a great time, I would love to continue hanging out with you, but I'm not looking for anything serious. which of course was, you know, not what I wanted to hear, but right. I also appreciated that he was being open and honest and straightforward about where he is. So I think that if you know that that's where you're at and you're not looking for a big commitment, then yeah, it is a nice courtesy to get that out in the open initially. But, you know, as a woman who's looking, you know, probably I think for something serious, I don't think you need to necessarily know right away what you're looking for with a particular person. So I don't think you should be expected to say, hey, by the way, I really want to have babies in the next year. Like, I don't think
that's
you
a little scary
on a first date. You know, I mean, nobody wants to hear that. And I think you need more time to figure out, you know, what your longevity is with a person. But as far as following up or asking someone out on a second date right away, I think I do appreciate hearing from someone within the next couple of days. I don't think 24 hours is a rule.
I must ask you, so have you been hanging out with this guy, or the fact that he said, look, I just want to hang out, was that the kind of end of it for you?
No, we continued to date, and then it ended for related reasons.
Well, I don't want to dig too deep there, Elizabeth Tannen. We're talking about dating in this hour of Radio Times with Elizabeth Tannen, with Daniel Post-Senning, and with Stephen Petro, and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can carry on this conversation on our Facebook page. We posted a question yesterday, and it got a fair amount of traffic, so you can do that as well. And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. Let me get, looks like Jamie from Baltimore to join us. Jamie, go ahead. You're on the air.
I just wanted to say, I guess it's all in how you were raised and what you saw growing up. So for me, it was seeing my mom work 2 and 3 jobs and, you know, and that kind of thing, you know, constantly. She did marry, you know, her oldest son, watching her work like that. And then, you know, the gentleman that she married, you know, he was basically working like a 40-hour work week. So I always saw my mother working so much harder. So I swore to myself that when I did get married, if anybody was working 2 and 3 jobs, it would be me, you know? And so, to this day, me and my wife have been married just about 10 years now. And we have two girls that are 16 and 10. So I still make sure that I open their doors for them. I still make sure I open the door for my wife, you know, and all of these kinds of things just to show them I don't want that part to be lost. So we are living in an age where women, you know, can surely end up making more than they're making, that kind of thing. But that shouldn't change certain things. That shouldn't change who, you know, opens the door or not. You know, when it comes to, you know, to how bills are divided and that kind of thing. You know, all of that kind of stuff. Like I say, people do their own thing and all. But I don't think that there should be a situation where roles get reversed.
I hear you. I hear you. And Jamie, that's a really interesting, first of all, I appreciate you calling in because you raise it's a very touching story, I have to say. And we're almost out of time here, but Daniel, let me give you a chance to do a first response.
I like the I like the personal story. It's nice to hear that shared on air, because it does illustrate how some of these traditional roles can be the signs of consideration and respect that we want them to be, and they can really work to communicate the depth of our feeling and relationship. And they're things that we learn during the most formative times in our life. And I oftentimes talk to parents who are worried about their kids losing their manners or not having them. I say, you know what, these things always come back around. They're cyclical. It's the job of younger generations and people at certain stages in their social development to challenge the codes of conduct that they were raised with, but oftentimes they return to them as life moves on. And I'm definitely hearing some of that in this call, and it is really integral to who we are. I think it's why it's important to respect where lots of different people are coming from.
That's Daniel Post-Senning, author of Emily Post's Manners in a Digital World. Also with us, Stephen Petro, who writes the Civilities column for the Washington Post, author of Stephen Petro's Complete Guide to Gay and Lesbian Manners. And rounding out our trio of guests, Elizabeth Tannen, whose blog is Dating in the Odyssey Years. We spoke earlier this year. Post your dating advice on our Facebook page or send us a tweet. You can also download a podcast of this and other Radio Times shows by going to our homepage, page, whyy.org/radiotimes. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of the show. It's produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Builder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thanks so much for joining us.